in this book that we've been hearing so much about in recent weeks, John Parsons' book, The Fight for Religious Freedom. And I mentioned a few weeks ago or a month ago when I was speaking up here, it is the story of a 12-year lawsuit that Ananda and SRF were engaged in, but peppered throughout the book in really remarkable ways is one spiritual lesson after another. Is there a little feedback from my mic? Or? Yeah, okay. Okay, all right, so I'll just speak and you adjust the way. So the book is peppered with these really remarkable, deep, profound spiritual truths and lessons. And I've now read the book twice. I just keep feeling more and more of the subtlety that John was able to convey when he wrote this book. But I don't want to talk too much about the book today. John, in fact, will be here on October 20th, and you can all come and hear him. But in the preface to that book, which Jyotish and Davy Novak wrote, I remember as I was reading the preface, which in and of itself is just a great piece of literary work, I thought to myself, I can't fathom that there would be a person who could read this preface, like going through a book in a bookstore the way I often still do, and not want to read the book. It's beautifully written. And near the end of the preface, after they've spent this time comparing the SRF Ananda lawsuit to the battle that was going on in the American Revolution between the colonists and England, they make a statement towards the end and they say, no freedom can ever just be declared. You can't just declare that slavery is over and assume it will be over. You can't declare equal rights for all people or equal vote and just assume it will happen. There's a battle that has to go on. And at the beginning of that next paragraph, which is their last paragraph, they say, and here we have a David and Goliath struggle. And then they finish their last paragraph. Well, that piqued my interest, trying to remember everything I could about David and Goliath. Of course, we all know David was a relatively small man, or maybe even a normal-sized man, but compared to Goliath, the giant, he was certainly not a match, and he won the battle. But I couldn't remember much else about the story. And so the second time I read the preface, I started going back and reading about the story of David and Goliath. And it's really quite an amazing and beautiful story. So the story is that David was the son of the man Jesse, who lived at the time of King Saul, who was a very powerful king, and was also probably psychotic. I mean, I think that's what we would call him today. He would be a lovely, strong king. He would be really caring about his people, but then have these rage episodes and just kill a lot of people, and nobody ever knew how Saul was going to behave. And in the meantime, in the midst of Saul being the king, the Philistines and the Israelites were at war. So at one point, Saul calls Jesse and says, I want your son David. Now, people had been speaking about David, and they'd been speaking about him. He's young, but he has a kind of wisdom about him. And everybody had been talking, and Jesse, of course, assumed that Saul was going to be jealous. And we don't know this for sure, but I would say if I was Jesse, I might be worried that Saul was going to take my son and kill him. So Jesse saw all of these. He gives him bread and fruits and dried fruits, and he says, King Saul wants to see you. Go and give this to him as an offering. But when he gets there, Saul, in fact, greets him very well, and he calls Jesse, and he says, I'm enamored with your son, and I would very much like to have your son come and live in the castle with me. I want him here near me. I want him to be serving here. Jesse, of course, was incredibly relieved. And so David starts tending the sheep of Saul. That became his job. He was out in the fields with the sheep. Now the war is happening, and the Philistines and the Israelites come together out in the desert. The desert, of course, as we so often read in the Bible and in the Gita, representing here ego, the mind, that place where there is no real realization of the divine. And they've always fought these wars, hand-to-hand combat. And tens of thousands of people could die in a battle, very much like we saw here in the Civil War. It would be nothing for 20,000 people to die. But for this particular battle, Goliath steps forward, and we have no way of interpreting really from the Bible just exactly how big Goliath was. But it is said that he towered over Saul. And from other readings, we know that Saul was 6 feet 6 inches. So Goliath was seriously big. And he says, we're going to do our battle different this time. I'm going to ask anybody who wants to come and fight me to fight me. And whoever wins the battle, that side wins. We're not going to shed all of this other blood. Well, here's this giant, never mind wrapped in all of this armor, which makes him appear even bigger. None of the Israelites would budge. And they're all looking to Saul, expecting, of course, that their king would stand up and say, I'll fight, but he doesn't. So what happens is for 40 days, twice a day, Goliath comes out, and in a big, booming voice, dressed with all of his armor, who is it that has the courage to fight me? That will be the victor, and we will know which team is the strongest. Now, this is sounding a little bit to me like the Bhagavad Gita with the Pandavas and the Kauravas, and you're wondering where this battle is going to go. But for 40 days, twice a day, nobody stepped up. There was no fighting going on, but Goliath just kept presenting himself. Now, David's father knows that they're down there, and he's got two other sons, who are sitting with the Israelites, not accepting the challenge, not rising to the challenge. And he calls David from the fields, and he says to David, I want you to take this bread and water and food down to your brothers. So David, of course, does as he's told. He's a very quiet, inward, obedient young man. This is how he's presented in the Old Testament. And he goes down to the desert where they're fighting. And just as he arrives, Goliath comes out and does his twice a day thing. Who is going to accept the challenge? And David looks around and he says to himself, I don't believe that I'm seeing what I'm seeing. He looks at his brothers and he said, is this true that our enemy is challenging you to a fight and for 40 days and nights none of you have accepted? He said, I can't believe this is a fight for a kingdom of people who know God. There is something more at stake here than your life. And everybody says to him, David, you're young. You don't know what you're talking about. We cannot fight this giant. But David just keeps appealing to everybody. He knows somebody has to fight this battle. And finally, he goes up to Saul, and he says to Saul, I want to go and fight the giant. And Saul just laughs at him and says, David, you just have no idea. Look at you. You don't even have a shirt on. Never mind a whole suit of armor. And you're young and you've never been to battle. What can you possibly know? And David said, I know that for the sake of God, I need to fight this battle. He said, let no man's heart close or be lost in the eyes of these people. Meaning, we cannot lose sight of the truth that we have lived for all of these years. And Saul refuses to let him go. And David said to him, you know, Saul, you think I'm just out there tending your sheep. He said, but one time a bear came, and I fought that bear, and I saved one of your sheep right from the very mouth of the bear. And Saul basically says, not good enough, David. And David said, okay, but the next time it was a lion, and I fought this lion with my bare hands, and I saved the sheep. And Saul says, you do not have the strength to fight Goliath. And finally, David stops and he says, maybe I don't have the strength, but God has the strength. I will not go in there with my own strength, but I will go in there with God, and God will win this battle. And it really stops Saul. And he looks at David and he said, go then, and God be with you. So David, without any fear, he has no armor, he's got no sword, he has nothing. He takes his slingshot and he holds it in his hand and he goes down to the river and he gets 5 stones. And he comes running up the hill, absolutely, totally enthusiastic. Nothing holding him back. He's going to fight this battle. And it says, and he had his slingshot in his hand. He was ready. He was ready for whatever battle he had to do. And when he comes in front of Goliath, Goliath says, I'm not going to fight you. Look at you. This is ridiculous. And David said, never underestimate the power of God. And he takes his slingshot, and this part of the story we all know. And he aims right for the center of Goliath's head, and he knocks him down. And then he takes Goliath's sword, because he doesn't have a sword, and he kills him. And he cuts off his head. And he holds that head up, which is a famous picture that we've probably seen many times. And he has won the righteous battle, because he was never fighting it. He was fighting, he knew God would fight it through him, and he went back and he just bowed before Saul and these tens of thousands of men who never had the courage, who couldn't find the conviction, who were living with their fear, who didn't want to face what they had to face, which in this story is depicted as a giant. But it really holds up for us, what giants do we have in our life? What battles do we have to fight in our life? And what will it take for us to get to know that we're not fighting this battle alone, ever? That God is fighting the battle, and that when we have that faith in God, there is no way that we can lose the battle. Now, our reading today, I have to say, every time I've been sitting out there and I hear this reading for years, I think to myself, if there's anybody who's come here for the first time today, anybody who's new in the church, what does this reading sound like? Jesus is saying, if you put your mother before me, your father before me, if daughters put their mother-in-laws before me, you have to let go of all of your attachment, and you have to love me, value me, see the good in me over all of these people, over your children, he says. And I often think, who would sit through that? This feels like such a harsh teaching. I've always thought that. Yesterday when I read it, I feel like for the first time I saw, I felt, I knew what Jesus was saying. Because, and we've heard this talked about with this reading before, and we've heard it talked about with many readings, Jesus was not a mean man. He wasn't an angry man. I mean, at the very end of his life, he was being crucified. He was hanging on a cross. So not only imagining all of that physical pain, but the shame that one might think, given the times, hanging up there, with people just walking by you day after day, watching you die? And what does Jesus say? He says to God, forgive them. They know not what they do. This is not a man who's angry. Most of us can't even control our anger in the slightest little circumstance of life. We're having all of these circumstances to prepare ourselves for hopefully not a literal crucifixion, but for those harder challenges, for when we have to stand up in front of the giants, because we're all going to have giants. How could we not have giants? Look at the life of Yogananda. In the story we have in our reading today, the story of him wanting to go off into the Himalaya. Desperately he wanted to go. How many times did he try and leave? And Ananta, or his father, brought him back. And there's that story. And it's not an easy story to read in the autobiography of a yogi, where he's moved into the ashram. This is right before he meets his guru. And he's living in this ashram in Varanasi. You remember this story? Every morning he would get up and he would go up into the top floor to meditate because it reminded him of the attic room that he meditated in his childhood home. And all the time that he was in that ashram, the other young men in the ashram were saying to him, don't try and find God so fast. He met one roadblock after another. The stories that we get to read in this book, The Fight for Religious Freedom, the lawsuits that he had to come up against, the scandals, the lies, stories that many of us have never read. A lawsuit that was started by one of his very best childhood friends. He went through so much in his life to just keep showing us. We read these stories and we get to see over and over what happens when you're fighting a righteous battle for a righteous cause. What happens when you find the courage, find the conviction, the determination, the discrimination? Just in our reading it says this is a sword of discrimination. What battles do we fight? What are the battles? David knew this was a battle he had to fight. This was a battle against all the downward pulling forces, all of their fear, all of the greed, everything that was at stake between these two warring armies. This battle he knew he had to fight. And he rose to that occasion. He chose a more expansive, uplifted, higher ground, and he spoke the truth till nobody could resist him, which is exactly what Yogananda did, battle after battle. And these parallels that are drawn between Swami Kriyananda's life, and look what he had to go through, right up to and including a 12-year lawsuit. But what do we learn from all of this? We learn, as Jyotish and Devi say, might does not make right. That there is a battleground on which all of these battles can be fought. And what Jesus is saying to whoever was there listening to him, those people who had ears to hear, he was saying, I'm here not to tell you to not love your mother or father. He would never have said that. I'm not here to tell you to be mean to your children. He was saying, I'm here to show you the way. I'm here to outline the path for you to find all of the meaning in your life, to find these truths, to find this joy, the courage, the inner peace, the calmness that you say you want. Just like every one of us here, why would we be here otherwise? That's what we're looking for, even if we don't have those exact words. And these teachers come, these avatars, they come as spiritual cartographers. That's really what they are. They draw us maps, and that's exactly what Jesus was doing. Jesus was saying, It's very easy to just stay with your family, to love your mother, to take care of your children. It's very easy to continue to look outside for all of what you believe to be all of the love you can know, all of the safety that you can know. I'm here to tell you that it is not out there. Not don't love your mother and father, but don't believe for one minute that that's where you're going to learn the love of God. That is not where you're going to find inner peace. You might find moments of happiness, of course. You see, it's not like that story's a bad story. That's why I said Jesus was such a kind man, such a compassionate man. We never hear of anything else. We hear of him calling on his power when he needed to use his power. But power is a divine quality. We never read a story where he mistreated anybody. So he came to say, not something mean, not something trying to split families apart. He came to show us where we want to go. He didn't come to talk to us about where we already are. We know how to be in families. We do it better or worse, some of us. But we sometimes know how to love our partners pretty well. Certainly we're better most of the time, particularly early on, loving our children. These teachers come to show us how to move forward. That's what we want to know. They know we want to know that. They did not come to speak to our egos. They came to help us, as the reading so beautifully says, move away from everything that's going to help us think that our egos are exactly where we want to be, because God watches the heart, because they know our intentions. So Jesus is saying, I'm going to help you turn around and look in and find everything you want. And then, in fact, you can have anything you want in the world, right? Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all else will be added unto you. If you want to learn about true love, you come in and you find true love. And then love whoever you want. I think I've mentioned once before in here, there's a friend of mine who had her son is an addict and an alcoholic, although fortunately now he's been in recovery for many years. And how many nights I used to do these midnight runs with her to find out where he was on the streets. And she would just see him, see he was safe, see he was breathing, and then she could go home and go to sleep. Sometimes she'd deliver a meal to him and his other homeless buddies and then leave. And one day she said to me, what is the difference between just genuinely loving somebody and codependence? And it was a very good question. And I said to her, just a little attachment. You know, when we're attached to the outcome, it changes the whole story. And really what these teachers want us to see is that so much of what goes on in the world, in our egos, all of that that's trying to satisfy our egos is not going to get us where we want to go. It cannot. One of the truths that's such a simple truth, these are one of those things that could sound silly when you say it out loud, but they're profound, that I've come to understand is that often when we're asking questions or we're wanting to know something, we're asking from our ego's perspective. And the spiritual answer can't make sense. It's like trying to speak two different languages. We have to move far enough down the path that little by little we can start hearing these spiritual realities. So for the first time yesterday, I didn't get a stomachache when I read this reading. Literally. So it's just moving a little further down. And I thought, I really see what's going on here. This is such an act of love. It is such an act of generosity on Jesus' part, not to try and speak our language, not to try and come to us where we are, but to raise the spiritual bar and say, do you mean it? Are you serious? Then you're going to have to go to war with some of your giants. You'll have to do that. And you probably have a few wars along the way that don't feel like such giants, but you have to fight them. And if we can do it like Goliath did, running up the hill, slingshot in hand, with joy, he ran with joy, then we'll be able to begin to win those battles. I hope I have the source of this right. This idea just came to me. I think I got this from something I read in Tondava's blogs, in one of his blogs. And I think that the lesson, the spiritual lesson, is from a movie that Morgan Freeman was in, and it was something about God, and he was playing God. I don't remember the name of the movie. Maybe some of you do. But at some point he's speaking, and again, I hope I have the correct author of this line, but he's speaking as God, and he's saying, do you think if you pray for compassion, you'll just get compassion? No, you probably won't. But you'll get unending opportunities to practice kindness and compassion. Do you think if you pray for courage, you'll just be given courage? Probably not. But you'll be given a lot of opportunities to act courageously. If you pray for strength, you'll be given hills to run up and down. And that's what we're doing on this path. We're looking for the hills. We're looking for the opportunities to practice what we need to practice to be able to get where we want to go. And that's exactly what Jesus is offering us. In the Bhagavad Gita reading today, it says, here's what happens when you practice. Here's what happens when you live in terms of these expanded truths, which interestingly, we find inside where we are in control. That's where we find them. If you do that, you will look at a clod of mud or a bar of gold, and it will look the same to you. Somebody can be angry with you, they can be loving you. It will not move you away from your inner peace. It says there can be a joyful experience going on, a painful experience going on. You will rest in that place of deep love. If you've practiced it, if you've taken these opportunities to remember that we need to move into a spiritual realm to begin to learn these spiritual lessons. There's the story, it's not really a story, but the chapter in the autobiography of a yogi where Paramahansa Yogananda is talking about Dr. Bose, who was a physicist and a plant physiologist, who Master had a great deal of respect for, and he went to a talk that Dr. Bose gave when he was opening the Bose Institution for Scientific Studies, or that's probably not the name of it. And this talk, if you haven't read it recently, you really must. It's a true Dharma talk. It is so beautiful and so inspiring. And Dr. Bose stands up and he says, over the centuries, some Indians always arise who discard, he says, the immediate and, he uses a perfect word that I don't have, but really attractive prize that's right there. And he's talking, this is what he does in his whole talk. He's talking about science. He's even talking about scientific prizes. But he goes on to say, they've discarded those in favor of seeking truths that exist in a higher reality. They want to transcend the immediacy of the moment when a sparkling, beautiful gift is being offered to them, to find something that transcends the material world, he says. And this does not happen through passive renunciation, he says, but by active struggle. And he plays with his words like that throughout this whole talk. He's speaking about science, but he's speaking to us who are yogis. He's speaking to us who are seeking. He's speaking to us who need to find some way to believe. When Davy Novak went to Swamiji when she was writing her book, Faith is My Armor. And she said to me, you know, Swamiji, I don't think I would have had the strength to do what you did. You listened to Master once in a garden party about developing communities. You didn't really have a roadmap. Nobody told you what books to write, how to do it, how do you start your first community. He said to her, I didn't think I had the strength either, Devi, but faith was my armor. That's what we need to be looking for. We need to be looking beyond what's right in front of us, what's obvious, beyond the familial warmth. The familial warmth in David and Goliath's desert, where the Israelites just sitting over on their little plot of sand with the Philistines saying, we're not going to fight with you. That was the place that they found the warmth. You know, it's in story after story. For Swamiji, it could have been to take the path everybody else took and not start these communities. But he said, faith was my armor. What are we going to find? How are we going to reach out? How are we going to let go of those immediate prizes or see them for what they are, but keep looking, keep expanding our vision. We're going to follow the roadmaps. We're going to listen to what Jesus said and not let our ego say, whoa, I don't like this reading. That sounds pretty hard to me. I don't want to take that on. That's our ego speaking. That's what it does. We're going to say, let me find the deeper meaning in this reading and let me listen, because this is exactly what the avatars came to do. He was here for not many years. He wasn't just going to hang out and party with us. He was going to say, I see what you want. I see what you want. Here's the road. All you have to do is step on it. Just start walking down this path, one foot in front of the other, and I'll be waiting with open arms, and I will keep showing you the way.